So, let's start, Gabe. Tell me a bit about how you first heard about this. Where did your knowledge of the Red Penguins come about? Because this is an amazing, amazing story.
Yeah, so, I mean, I vaguely remember kind of something about the Penguins and Red Army team, but I didn't really know much about it. I was a kid, and when I was promoting Red Army in New York, we had a screening in New York for the New York Rangers and, you know, the team and the front office, and basically Steve was there. I don't know why, but he came up to me after the screening and basically started pitching this, you know, Red Penguins. He said, you know, that was a great movie, and, you know, you did such a good job. You know, I've got, the way he says it, he can say it to you, but this is the Red Army's the beauty. I've got the beast of the story. And so he basically started telling me about, you know, the 90s and how Penguins, you know, what happened in Russia and to this Red Army team. And I kind of really wasn't interested and almost kind of disgusted by it when I heard about it, because I just, you know, had just done this huge thing on the Red Army team, and the last thing I wanted to do was something similar, you know, didn't want to be pigeonholed. So anyways, Steve said, well, let me send you materials that I have on the store, and I gave him my address, and, you know, a couple months later, I got this huge box to my house, and I didn't look at it for about a year until my wife was, like, cleaning out the house and was going to throw away this big box, and I started to look through it out of guilt, and ultimately, you know, was kind of amazed, and it was very humorous, and, you know, I could tell even just by how Steve collected the materials and what he was, how he organized it. He's just a really funny guy and kind of eccentric, and just, I knew the story was just absolutely crazy and had so many dynamics to it that I could you know, flex a lot of muscles that I thought were kind of natural to me, which is humor and kind of absurdity and strangeness and but also politics and, you know, history. And you know, a little bit of sport. It's not really a sports film, but, you know, obviously we want to market to them because it is one of the craziest, if not the craziest, sports stories kind of out there. And so, yeah, I just kind of, like, gradually got strung into it and you know, kept taking one step at a time. The first was to interview Steve and kind of see how good he was on camera and whether he was going to, you know, because someone needed to kind of tell this story and do it well, and Steve was obviously the guy there, and he just, when I did the interview, you know, this is a hell of a main character and really, you know, compelling guy, and I, you know, after that kind of kept moving. That's how it started.
So, Steve, I've got to ask, most Jewish people run away from Russia. What made you go back to Russia? And can you talk a bit about Howard and the Penguins and how this all really, like, behind the scenes came to fruition of really purchasing the team and going through the process?
Sure. Gabe, thanks for the intro. If the 1980 men's U.S. Olympic hockey team was the miracle on ice, I told Gabe that the Russian Penguins were the disaster on ice. Because all of the stars of the NHL, all of the Russian stars had been plucked by the NHL, and we were left with nothing in Russia. So it was a very sad time for Russians, having seen their forests of great players just clear-cut by the NHL. So regarding Baldwin and the Pittsburgh Penguins, this idea to create the joint venture came from Michael Barnett, who was Wayne Gretzky's agent. He also represented Brett Hull and Jaromir Jagr, a lot of the top NHL stars. And he had met with Tikhonov and Gushin and had heard about the disaster in Russia. No money for the army team, no fans, no sponsors, and really a sad tale of the world's most famous team that had won more championships than the Boston Celtics and the Montreal Canadiens and the New York Yankees. So Mike Barnett went to Howard and mentioned this opportunity. Baldwin jumped on it, and he needed to find a crazy young guy that spoke a little Russian, understood the culture, had worked with Russian players before, and could leave in 5 minutes. So that was me. So I took the gig, and I wasn't really worried about the anti-Semitism until I got there. And anti-Semitism is subtle and not so subtle in Russia. And so I experienced both, but it wasn't the biggest problem we had. The mafia was worse than the anti-Semitism.
When you first met the Russian side of things, can you talk about their reaction to you? I mean, we get so much of Gushin's response to you, but what did you feel about those guys?
Well, first of all, today's Gushin's 75th birthday, and he's still breathing oxygen, which is quite impressive, considering his heart attacks and drinking and imprisonment and everything he's been through. It was really a tough go for me because, as I stated in the film, no matter what the Americans did, the Russians always felt that we were luring them into a trap and we're going to crush them. And obviously, if you look at the Russian culture over the last 500 years, it's been emperors and czars and communists and Bolsheviks and Putin and revolutions, and they've always been afraid, and they've been living under somebody's rule. So when we showed up, we were looked at askance. Remember, the NHL had taken all of their best players, and they looked at me as perhaps the next wave of thieves that would maybe steal their coaches or something else, you know. So we were really looked at askance. Very difficult.
I'm curious, the footage that we have of when you guys going over there, and Gabe, you may want to jump in on this. How much footage was taken by...
Well, I have a question. I mean, with Steve, Steve, is there any validity to... Mm-hmm. The way that they felt, you know, would you feel the same way if you were in their shoes? Or, you know, do you sometimes get paranoid? You know, that, Americans, you guys definitely had interest in, I think Americans would have exploited as much as they could if they were allowed to. Do you agree? Or?
Absolutely agree. And, you know, it's funny because some of the scouts, even coaches and scouts, came up to me looking to me as sort of like the Harriet Tubman, you know, that I'd be the Underground Railroad to get them out as well. There was definitely this fear not to trust the Americans. And, you know, similar to, I had a lacrosse project and I needed funding from the original people, from the Iroquois Nations, and they loved the concept. We were going to honor the creators of the game, which are the original people of America, created lacrosse. But at the end, they wouldn't do the deal with us because of the history of what the white man has done, you know, to the original people. So I completely understood it, and I understood their fear, their reticence. But after a while, you know, you do so much good for somebody, you would think that eventually they would trust you. Unfortunately, that never happened.
Can you talk a bit about that? You... Especially the relationships, I mean, like Gushin, that it must be disconcerting that you never did kind of... There's the great thing that Gabe asked them are, do you consider Steve a friend? Do you consider Gushin a friend?
Absolutely. You know, he's, you know, if you know anyone who's suffered abuse in their life of any sort, you know, they've been, the Soviet and Russian people have been abused for hundreds of years, so they're all living with PTSD, and it's going to take probably generations until our two countries can even trust each other again. Yeah, it's going to take a while, especially with Putin, you know, guaranteeing him a life term at president.
That begs the question, the timing of this release of this movie. Gabe, you may want to comment on this. What does it mean to release the film now in current climate compared to, you know, 5 years ago or maybe 5 years from now? I mean, what do you feel about releasing it right now in
I always sort of cringe when this is very common in the documentary world too. Everybody's trying to do something that's right in the zeitgeist. That's like, you know, now it's, you know, whatever it is, gender, race, which is, it's all good and valid, and you know, I'm just trying to name all those sort of trendy words we have now, you know. But it's just like, and if you look on like what's doing, it's streaming, it's you know, it's all those kinds of things, you know. And I've never been one to like really focus on that, you know, because I think it's a little, there's something to me a little bit strange about that, you know. So I like to make movies that will work like in any time, and they're just great, entertaining, interesting stories that give you something about human nature, and that way you can watch it 20 years from now and say, yeah, like, you know, that's what happens to human beings, and these are the conflicts that happen if you're not careful, you know what I'm saying? Because versus sort of chasing trends, you know what I'm saying, which is very, very common in documentaries. So I never want to make a film, again, that's like trendy in the moment. But however, you know, this conflict seems to kind of have lasted for such a long time between U.S. and Russia, and I think that they, you know, that there's just a lack of understanding between the two countries, the mentalities, the psychologies, and that kind of, it seems to kind of go on and on. And, you know, right now with even, with Red Penguins, I mean, this Navalny, you know, poisoning, you know, it's just like trying to kind of look into this culture and understand it. There's very few films that get you into Russia, into the people, the psychologies. I guarantee you can't name really one besides Red Army. That's American kind of made for audiences. You know what I'm saying? So this film really can kind of help people understand the relationships and the mentalities of Russia, what they went through, the history, and how it led to Putin, how the country is now. You know what I'm saying? What? And go ahead.
Well, I love that. I mean, I think it was eye-opening, the amount. I think a lot of people knew there was the fall and there was a struggle, but definitely this film opened my eyes to even the elements of the constitutional crisis, the battling, the violence that was going on. I don't think many people are aware of that. Can y'all talk about the violent elements, not just you know, the mob stuff later on, but very much what was going on with the military and how it was affecting everyday life? I mean, the carjacking sequences. I mean, this was a world that I don't think Americans have any clue of happening and happening right there so vividly.
Yeah, Steve, you can talk about that, but before you say that, Steve, I mean, one cautionary tale you mentioned about, okay, what's happening now is that, you know, our society right now in the U.S. is, like, you know, a lot more chaotic, a lot more riots than it ever has been. And, you know, if our system seems to be a little bit precarious right now economically, you know, a lot of things, you know. So, you know, this is a cautionary tale about what happens when a system is very weak, you know.
Also, when the U.S. president has a crush on a Russian dictator. I'm laughing, you mentioned Alexei Navalny, which is no joke. You know, another polonium 210 poisoning, perhaps. But, you know, poisoning and dirty tricks was also part of sport. And when I got to Russia in 93, there were many, many stories of food poisonings for teams coming in to play the Russians. And it was happening when I was there. You know, the day of the game, 7 or 8 or 10 of the opposing players were shitting their brains out. They had been poisoned. So, I mean, this, you know, and then you look at the Russians in the Olympics with all the doping. So cheating has always been a major part, you know, and poisoning. And this is, my fear is that America is starting to resemble Russia, especially with Trump in there.
Since we don't, sadly, we don't get Tikhonov in the film because of his death. Steve, can you tell us a bit about getting to know him? I mean, Gushin is such a an interesting character. I'm sure Victor was just as fascinating.
Victor was complex because he had two sides. One was the militaristic Soviet authoritarian coach, and the other side was this really warm guy that almost was conflicted being in his position. He wanted to be human, but he couldn't. He had to be part of this robotic Soviet system that would knock on the doors of 18-year-old kids, you know, 11 time zones away and rip them away from their parents and put them into the army immediately just to get them on the hockey team. That's what he did with Alexander McGilney in Khabarovsk. And then McGilney returned the favor by defecting a couple of years later. But it's really, he was a very, very interesting guy. As a matter of fact, one of the funny stories with Victor is that the first game of the year, my idea was to have an acrobat wearing Dmitri Starostenko's uniform, who was a New York Rangers draft pick. He had just been called up to the NHL, but no one knew it. So we had this acrobat going to come down head first with the uniform on and give the puck to the referee to start the season. And Tikhanov, in the pregame meeting, heard about this, and he said there's no way he's going to let us make a mockery of the hockey season. And so I begged him. I tried to explain, this is all theater. It's positive. The fans will love it. And he finally agreed. And he said, under one condition, that you're the one in Starostenko's uniform, and I'm going to be at the top of the building with a pair of scissors cutting the rope when you're going down. So he had this sort of funny side of him, but unfortunately he could never step out of that. He always had to answer to the generals, and eventually the generals turned on him and sent the army with their guns trained at him and Tikhanov one day at the arena, and Gushin and Tikhanov responded by hiring Spetsnaz, which is sort of like the special forces in Russia. So there was a standoff in front of the building. So Tikhanov was a tortured man. He could never really escape the evil clutches of the Russian government.
You brought up, you know, wanting to bring elements to amplify the game, and that's definitely a part of, I think, the resurgence in bringing fans back to the arena. Where did your ideas come from, Steve? I mean, you pulled out anything and everything you could come up with, I feel like. Where did these ideas kind of spark, and what were the ones that were maybe you didn't get to pull off, or any stories that were like, oh, whoa, that's a little tricky? I mean, bears, strippers, right. there's so much going on.
Right. Well, I cut my teeth in the minor leagues. I learned my skills in minor league baseball, minor league basketball, and hockey. So I made a ton of mistakes as a kid, and so it worked and didn't work. So I made sure that, you know, only the best promotions would work. So when we got to Russia, we first honored all the legends of the Red Army. That was the most important thing we could do, was to show respect for this incredible program that had pumped out the world's best players. And that's really how we won the hearts and minds of the media and the fans, was to honor not only the living legends, but the deceased legends, and bringing their wives and, you know, their widows and their children out to receive their jerseys and to hoist their number up to the rafters. In terms of, you know, crazy promotions, yes, we had barrel jumping, we had speed skating races, you know, we had bears drinking beer, we had strippers, we had Jeep giveaways, Stanley Cup trips. I mean, we did.
And they had grandmas racing.
Yeah, we had shootouts, right. We had, between periods, I used to invite fans to come on the ice to shoot to penalty shots against our goaltenders, against professional goaltenders. And one night we had babushka night, right, where you had to be a grandmother to go one-on-one with the goalies. And you'd be surprised how well these old ladies skated in Russia. I remember one promotion that we didn't do. You know, you wanted to hear one that we didn't do, that I wanted to do, and fortunately didn't do. Back in the day, there were these dashes for cash. You might remember, you know, fans would have, you know, 30 seconds to grab as much cash, either in a telephone booth with air flowing all over, or they would put the dollar bills and 20s on the court or on the ice. So I was going to do that in Moscow. And Victor Gusev, my partner, pulled me aside and said, you know what? You don't want that image of Russians crawling on their knees for the mighty American dollar. Mm. And I looked at him and I said, I love you. And we never did it, you know, because I didn't want to make those kinds of cultural mistakes.
Gabe, can you give us the breakdown of the interviews and the structure of what people were you know, apprehensive, what people were gung-ho? I mean, like, Alexander, the mascot guy, I mean, he seemed like a hoot to talk to. Can you talk a bit about the breakdown of getting the interviews?
Oh, like getting the interviews?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I clearly wanted kind of, you know, as many kind of main characters that were associated with the team, you know, and Steve kind of helped me with that. Just, you know, who were the guys that were like directly involved and important, you know? And so we tracked down a lot of these guys, and I really liked, I don't think there's a single interview I did that was not in the film. And then, you know, and then I wanted some other colorful characters, like, you know, the general we tracked down. That was great. This guy was a principal at a high school in Russia, and he was giving out awards, you know, to these kids, and then basically we went to his office and I asked him if he could change. He had his general costume or gear, whatever, his thing, and I asked him if he could put it on, and he did. And these guys were really open, and then, you know, some other colorful characters that you saw in the film, obviously the KGB prosecutor that we found. And when I say we, it's me, and I have a producer there in Russia that helped me track some people down. This guy, and basically we're looking for kind of an oligarch who was doing business in that era, you know, to help us with, like, how things got done then. And so we found this guy, you know, who we found out he was on Interpol's 10 Most Wanted with Osama bin Laden. He's not allowed outside of Russia. And he was, like, the friendliest guy in the interview. Obviously, I didn't deal with him in a business way, but he invited us to his restaurant. He fed us. He was asking us to sign his books. I mean, it was kind of bizarre, you know? And I just feel like, you know, any movie, this, I always felt like, as soon as I started interviewing during Russia, I got the image of Big Lebowski in my mind, because I just thought that every character I met was, like, funny and weird and strange, and just, it became, I kind of knew it had this sort of darkly comedic vibe to it. I mean, they were very real, too, like the mascot, you know, and they all kind of played their own part in the story. Does that answer satisfy what you're going after?
Definitely, and I kind of want to ask a follow-up, especially about, you brought up the prosecutor. I think his name
but
is...
But the mascot, too, I mean, sort of interrupted, but anything. I spent, like, hours just, like, walking through Moscow, like, really late at night. He was kind of telling me all this philosophy about Russia and the history and why people are the way they are and how it's sort of... he's like a genius, but he's also kind of a silly fool. He's like very in the art world and took me to these galleries. It was pretty wild. It felt a lot like Before Sunset. You know how you just walking, talking about life? Anyways, yeah.
Can you expand on the interview specifically with the prosecutor? I think his name was Vladimir. We literally see you guys interview interrupted. Can you tell us that sequence?
Yeah, so I basically woke up that morning, and, you know, I didn't even know we were going to find this guy. And I asked the producer, okay, who do we got? Because that's how every day went in Moscow. We didn't know who we were going to get that day. Everything was sort of, I arrived there without a single interview. And so that morning, he said, okay, we're meeting this guy. He's a KGB prosecutor. You know, he knows a lot about what was going on. He was in the KGB at that time. I said, okay, great. So we're looking for a place, and my producer says, okay, well, let's shoot in front of the KGB building. And I was like, dude, no, we can't. No. You know, because it was like towards the end of the shoot, you know, I got all this footage. I didn't want to get everything confiscated, You know what I'm saying? And I thought that was a little bit too aggressive. So we did shoot like near Red Square, but we just stopped the thing and I said, okay, let's shoot here. And so the guy got out, we got our thing and found a kind of interesting frame and just started shooting. I think, and so essentially we're kind of in the middle of public, but there is a guy who has basically started lurking behind our crew, like, right, I mean, small crew, it's just me and a sound guy and camera. And I start, you know, he's standing there for 5 minutes, just literally way too close, listening. And I said, I kind of stopped the interview. I said, what the hell, you know, who is this guy? Like, let's get him out of here, you know? And within seconds, the police show up, five policemen, and said, you know, everybody's got to leave. There's a bomb in the area. And so that was, we just ran out of that interview, and that was it. I had gotten enough, you know, of that interview.
So surreal.
I think you were the bomb in the area. Yeah. They were getting rid of, right?
You know, there's a great line in the film that says, and that's how Disney got involved. Steve, can you talk to us about Michael's goals and ideas and how that, I think, changed a lot of things for you guys and obviously brought a new level of money, which also impacted. Can you tell us a bit about that?
You know, it's funny because earlier we talked about trust and fear, and it was the same story with Disney. The Russians could not believe that this was true, that Disney was going to create a partnership with Pittsburgh and the Red Army and shoot Mighty Ducks. I can't remember, it was 3 or 4 or 5 he talked about in Moscow. Michael was talking about it, merchandising the entire brand and licensing it, selling it in their theme store, in their theme parks and in their retail stores, online catalog. So there was a ton of money, and for 6 months, Gush and Atikinov refused to sign the deal, thinking that it was another trap that we were luring them into. So it was everything was viewed as a Trojan horse, when in actuality, it was just great diplomacy. There was no chicanery. That was the sad part of the whole movie, is that we came with the best intentions and were looked at as if we were trying to rob them blind. And that's the story between the two countries, this great distrust. And it still exists, and it's getting worse. So I think the Disney microcosm was that, you know, if they had signed this deal, this would have been the greatest sports joint venture ever, because we would have been global, you know, global stories. It would have been, Disney would have been telling the story at that point, not Pittsburgh. So it was unfortunate for everybody.
The film, in the end, showcases a lot of the people that were lost, and we've been talking about, kind of in the news right now, obviously the poisonings and that have happened. Can either one of you talk about anyone you want to that you know, that was lost, that really impacted you, and you wish that, you know, things were different over there, maybe?
You can go, Gabe. Yeah, I mean, just...
Well, yeah, I don't really know personally anyone besides who we mentioned in the film. I mean, obviously, I was surprised. I knew that story of the guy who was, you know, the television entertainer guy. It was just a crazy time. I mean, just that period is like the most dramatic, with business killings and mafia, and, you know, it's one of the most dramatic, but untold stories, periods, and, you know, in film. I don't know, no one cracked that, you know, but anyways.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's the sadness, maybe not, we lost a lot of, you know, players, but a few players have died in strange, you know, car accidents, and obviously the murder of Alexander Osachi in the film, the San Jose Sharks draft pick. But for me, the worst death of all was the death of the joint venture. I really, you know, we had, the two countries had a great chance to use hockey as diplomacy and perhaps opening up other business channels, you know, through sport. And unfortunately, that window was only open for a couple of years. And then when Yeltsin got sick and the oligarchs picked Putin to replace him, you know, all bets were off, and I don't think that window will open, you know, as long as Putin is alive.
In that sense, then, is this film, I think Gabe, you said it earlier, a cautionary tale, not just for Russians, but for Americans. Is it sad that the documentary isn't a look into potential hope of what could have been? I'm curious where you guys feel about.
Yeah, man, I think that it is a cautionary tale on one hand, but on the other hand, there, you know, I think what I'm trying to do here is show that, look, there are good people there and good, interesting people. Like, look at all. Not everyone in the film is like a negative guy. You know, there's these people are educated and kind, and you see that, and I think people can relate to some of them. Do you think so, sir? That you watch it and you can, you know, realize that these people are just like us, and some of, you know, we have good people, we have bad people, but look, you know, getting to understand them is the first step, you know, in relating to them, right?
Not only that, but being able to just be
even the mafia guy. I mean, you know, he may not be as bad as you think. I'm just saying. I don't know. I mean, he was charged with, like, you know, not killing people, but, like, you know, bank fraud or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, I'm just.
Well, no, I love that, because what I got from the film was I was sorrowful for Steve, for instance, that I really wanted you and Gushin to be able to, you know, celebrate his birthday, like, for instance, you know, and, right. and still be friends. I was saddened to see that didn't get to come to fruition because of the circumstances of both sides, you know. Steve, in the film, you talk about, you know, the physical ailments you feel that you've gotten from this, but can you talk about just how this changed you as a person on all levels?
Yeah, well, I studied cultural anthropology at Syracuse University, and so I've always been very sensitive to other cultures and appreciating other cultures. So I had no earthly idea what I was walking into in 1993, but I've learned so much, you know, from my friendships over there, because don't forget, these are human beings living in an authoritarian country. And they're afraid to speak out. They're afraid to do anything. So they live in fear constantly. And, you know, just try to put yourself in their shoes. And hopefully America won't get there. But it really is, it's taught me to really, to understand and be patient and to appreciate every culture. And the Russians, you know, I mean, their music, their arts, their culture, their sport, incredible. So, you know, for me, it was very sad to see what, again, was a well-intentioned joint venture turn into another scam. In other words, we were perceived as carpetbaggers coming in just to clean them out and then make our money and leave. And that's the sad part, is that they really just didn't understand that we were here to help them and not to destroy them.
Well, guys, I really enjoyed the film. I do hope that people get to see it. It is enlightening, what you've given us, Gabe, and Steve, what you lived through. Gabe, I'd love for you to give us a, you know, you've said it a couple times, but what you hope people will gain from this film.
I think first and foremost, you know, I just... You know, I'm in the movie business. I want to entertain people. I want them to be like, wow, that was a hell of a story. That was really fun and entertaining and interesting, weird. You know, just a great movie, period, right? And then at the end of the day, I hope that I took them into a world that they can better understand now, because there's just so few. Again, there's like nothing out there that does this kind of stuff. That gets Americans into this world, help them understand it, so they can make better judgments about it, you know. And obviously, it's a big untold historical period that you know, if they want that knowledge, great, and help people understand the mentality and psychology of Russians and, you know, the great variety of them. And basically that's it. But tell me about Seelig News, about how, are you guys good at spreading the word?
I definitely will. I'll be not only posting this interview, but this doc is one of the best docs I've seen all year, and I couldn't imagine all that I got to see. So I loved it, and I definitely will put it out there for you guys. And just so glad that we get to talk to Steve and that you survived this, Steve. So thank you guys for doing this, and Steve for being as bold as you are. It was inspiring to watch all that you accomplished in that wild, wild time.
Well, thank you. Let's do it in Israel now. We should have started an Israeli hockey league with craziness, but in the middle of the heat and the global warming, we'll start a hockey league.
I think the world needs more Steve Warshaw. Guys that have great spirits, they're survivors, and they have helped the world spiritually.